today in San Francisco, we had a rally to demonstrate against the lack of action that the UN General Assembly, the Human Rights Council, and the United Nations Security Council have displayed in this past week as they've met in New York. The rally was a reminder that suffering of Kashmiris continues under this humanitarian crisis, that there's a blockade on communications, on necessary supplies for human life and survival, and yet the Indian government refuses to allow independent observers and media journalists to do their job to show the world what's really happening. In history, since the conflict began, there have been 11 UN Security Council resolutions on Kashmir, which explicitly asked for there to be a referendum for the right of the people of Kashmir to have a vote on their right to self-determination. And that's something that the UN Security Council hasn't reiterated. We know that the Human Rights Council raised concerns about what's happening, but their statements haven't been forceful enough to a point where they've asked Indian government to take action.
So when we talk about the humanitarian crisis that's going on in Kashmir, can you break that down for us or give us a snapshot?
There's an army of 900,000 strong in Kashmir for 8 million people. That's one for every 10 people. People are not free to move. There's a communications blockade, which means no access to landlines, to mobile phone and cell phone, to internet. There's no way to communicate with our family members. I have not heard from my family members in Kashmir for 52 straight days. There is a shortage of supplies, including water, medicine, and even emergency services. Doctors have been picked up for speaking out against the lack of services for them to provide, and also for speaking out against the rising casualty toll and the injuries that the armed forces are inflicting. We also know reports of about 1,000 young boys that are detained by the Indian military without recourse. Their parents aren't able to reach them because the Indian military does not record that they actually picked them up.
From your vantage point, what's the Indian government's interest in controlling this area?
So the Indian government, especially the current right-wing government under Prime Minister Narendra Modi, has explicitly made it known that Hindu supremacy is the name of the game. What they've wanted to ensure is that Kashmir, as India's only Muslim-majority state, does not deserve the right to do so, that the voices of Kashmiris who have asked for the right to self-determination be expunged. They consider Kashmir to be an integral part of India, and they're attempting to colonize and annex Kashmir by shifting in Indians from the rest of India into Kashmir to change the demographics, to ensure that when there is, and if there is ever a vote, that the people who make the vote are predominantly not Kashmiris. We're seeing an exodus, an ethnic and cultural cleansing of the people of Kashmir.
It seems that the Trump administration is siding with the Indian government on this.
Yes, my impression is that the Trump administration has made a few overtures of mediating a peace between India and Pakistan, but the Trump administration, as with its other foreign policy considerations, sees India as a vast market, which it is. India is the biggest market for American goods. It allows for the U.S. to continue having trade relations, and really trade relations are being placed above human rights violations. And so the Trump administration has said that they want to continue this relationship with India, and if it comes at the cost of human rights abuses or violations, then so be it.
What can we be doing here in the United States and beyond to really stand in solidarity with the people in Kashmir?
Well, one of the things really is that the voices of Kashmiris are so silenced. A vast majority of the world still does not know about this Kashmir issue. There has been awareness through these rallies, through these social media campaigns. So it is important for people to come to an awareness of what's happening, like with other human rights abuses in the world, to speak to their elected officials here in the United States, especially given that the Indian government and the United States government are close allies and continue to be so, to show up in the streets. Just like when people resist the Trump administration against any form of ethno-nationalism or any sort of religious and ethnic supremacy. And that really is what it will take to keep elevating the voices of Kashmiris, to focus on the suffering of Kashmiris over geopolitical and economic interests.
Thank you. Last question, or last couple of questions. I wanted
sure.
to talk about your family. You said you haven't been able to be in touch with them in 52 days. Tell me, who do you have that's in Kashmir, and what's it like to try to get in touch with them?
My uncles and aunts, my cousins, my nephews and nieces, my grandparents are no longer alive, but they're buried in Kashmir. And I know that my heart beats for the people of Kashmir. We've been attempting to contact them to find out whether they were able, for example, to celebrate the big Muslim holiday of Eid last month, and we weren't. We don't know if they're alive, if they're sick, if they're able to go to school, which we know has been shut down. And it's a hard proposition to be here in the United States and not know what your family members are going through, to not know whether they're alive or dead. We've heard stories of other Kashmiris who found out that their parents passed away after 5 days, after a neighbor who came back to the United States told them. We've heard stories of people's parents being in hospitals and then finding out days later. And we know there's a shortage of supplies, especially for diabetic and heart attack patients. And this is really concerning because our lives are seen as worthless or less than others. And that's really what it feels like to exist as Kashmiri on a day-to-day basis.
That's tough. So this means no social media, no internet,
mm-hmm.
no phones.
Absolutely nothing at all. This is we are living here in the 21st century where it's easily accessible for us to see what's happening all over the globe, but we have not been able to contact our family members. And the few of us who have been have brief conversations because oftentimes it's landline service that could easily be tapped by the Indian government, and people often do not speak very much. There's a sense of defeat, of oppression, and what you might expect psychologically from individuals and communities that are locked in what is essentially an open-air prison.
And is there any end in sight? Did the Indian government say this is a blackout for X amount of time, or we're just in this limbo not knowing what's going to happen or when?
Absolutely. It's a limbo where the Indian government has said they're doing this for the safety of these Kashmiris, but they have no end date in sight. Whenever they deem fit, like I said, the international community has been silent. The pressure, apart from a few countries, has not been significant. And so they're not allowed or asked these questions in international tribunals, such as the United Nations Security Council, at the General Assembly. And so there is no real end in sight for the humanitarian crisis, and more importantly, for the right to a referendum, which is guaranteed under various United Nations resolutions to the people of Kashmir. It is a right of all people to be able to have a vote, to have a choice in where they stay and how they stay. I mean, that's something that will continue. Even if the blockade is lifted, the violence and the conflict in Kashmir will continue until the people of Kashmir have a right to self-determination.